This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
How are you? Welcome in. It's WEEI Afternoons. Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, Boston Sports Original, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Nice to have you with us here today on a sunny Wednesday afternoon, 20th of November here in the Commonwealth. We are live in our Brighton studios. Got a busy show today. That was Don Sweeney you just heard. We'll be talking a lot of Bruins today, fallout from the Montgomery firing, which happened yesterday while we were on the air. But really, it happened as soon as Scoops Keefe let us know it was happening at 1:40 yesterday. Also, we'll be talking with Adam Schefter, Mr. Tomcat, Adam Schefter at 3:45. Looking forward to that. Brian Scalabrine joins the show at 4. And there's some other things as well that we'll be getting to, like the Celtics last night. It's a very packed show today. We got all four teams.
I'm a little overwhelmed.
It's a lot. It's like very stimulating.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah, it's a lot of things going on here, for sure. Not to mention Gerard Mayo and Drake May both spoke today as well. We'll get into the matchup with the Miami Dolphins, which is coming up. We have Behind the Glass in the 5 o'clock hour, all sorts of things. But let's start
Cole
here.
Cole Strange is practicing. That's
Cole
exciting.
Strange is back, you guys. It's going to sell
Did
some
jerseys.
Did you
see jerseys. That? Gerard Mayo was like, it's exciting.
It is exciting if you're really into offensive line play and not very good offensive line play. And, first-round draft bust. All that stuff, that pops your cork, then yes. The Cole Strange thing is very exciting. Anyway, that was Don Sweeney, who spoke at length today, answered a lot of questions, and revealed some things that I definitely wasn't expecting him to say, like that there was a contract offer made in the offseason, that there were discussions, I guess. Maybe it wasn't an offer, but there were contract discussions, contract negotiations. Clearly, they didn't go anywhere, and now the fate of the team, he says, rests with him. The fate of this decision and what happens next rests with him. The roster from here on out, the trade deadline is 4 months away from now. It's a while, so you know we'll see exactly what happens there, but that rests with him as well. And the fallout from this is already starting to ripple through the locker room. David Pastrnak speaking at length about how we failed Montgomery and we lost a great guy and a great coach and etc. You're hearing a lot of that from guys in that locker room.
Yep.
I'm very interested in seeing how this team looks tomorrow night. This is going to be one of the more intriguing games, I think. And every time a coach gets fired, you want to see what they look like the next game after that. But this one in particular, where it's so clear that the players let the coach down, where it's just unanimous, basically. I haven't heard one person, one commentator, one caller, a texter, a person in the Twitch chat, nobody. I have not heard one person say that the players don't deserve a hefty share of the blame for this all going on. I mean, it's clear as day. And listen, I've been yelling about Sweeney. I've been yelling about Cam Neely. I've been yelling about this stupid Bruins boys club that's been going on here for 20 years, producing one Stanley Cup and then acting like, hey, you know, we can't possibly move on from these guys from the 90s, who, by the way, never won anything themselves back when they were playing. And like, we got to keep everybody there. I was thinking about it today driving in, Andy. The Bruins in that way are kind of like the Montreal Canadiens. You know what I mean? Like, very love the smell of their own fart. Like, we're the Bruins. We have all Bruins in our front office. We're going to bring in all the, you know, people are going to stay here forever. No one's ever going to get traded. We're going to keep everybody right here. And then when they're done playing, we're going to put them on Nesson, and they're going to do the alternate broadcast. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's very what's the word? Incestuous. Yeah, I think it's kind of what it is. And I feel like for the Jacobs family, who, you know, Delaware North, like, they've put all this off, like, the way the Crafts used to with Belichick. They've put it all off on Neely and Sweeney to do all the hockey stuff, and they just kind of are there with the money, and that's fine. I mean, listen, it's the way a lot of these ownership groups operate, and frankly, I kind of like it. I like that they don't interfere very often.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that this whole thing with the Brewers, I mean, it's gotten to the point now where, yeah, these guys should be feeling the heat. These guys absolutely should be feeling the heat, because I think that this team kind of needs an enema, you know? Like, I think this team needs to be flushed right out, because at what point, you know, I'm watching Bergeron and Tuca and all these guys on the Nesson broadcast, people calling Greg Hill talking about, yeah, Bergeron should be the next head coach. Is this thing ever going to end? Like, are we ever going to get out of this cycle of mediocrity that is represented by all these guys? And listen, Bergeron was a great player. Tuca was a great goalie. All these guys were good players. So before you call in, like, oh, Arcand, you don't know hockey. Those guys were all great. I know they were great, but they didn't win anything. They won one Stanley Cup 13 years ago and had a bunch of really unfortunate flameouts in the playoffs and sometimes the finals after that when they made the play. They missed it a couple times, too. But you would think that they were this dynasty.
Right.
You know, you would think that they just never lost the cut. Like, they were there every single year and hoisted it every other season and all these awards and things like that. And it's just, it's not true, but they get kind of treated that way. And it's just, I just want the charade to end. You know, that's sort of how I feel about it. And this is a good opportunity to do that. I don't know if it's actually going to happen or not, but it just seems very hoity-toity. Where are the Bruins? You don't know. Like, you know, I just, at some point, when you keep failing over and over again, don't you want to start over with some fresh faces and new people? I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's a high priority. They've just left things to Neely. They've left things to Sweeney, and they said, figure it out and just keep making the playoffs. So long as you keep doing that, we're fine. We're satisfied over here in Delaware. But for the rest of us, I just feel like we're getting screwed, you know? Like, for the average fan, as much as you may like those guys and as much as you may like some of the guys on this team right now, just don't you want something more? Don't you want them to take that next step? Don't you want them to maybe try something different? It's just the same thing every year. You know, that's what I'm annoyed by.
So I am not quite ready to blow up the roster like you seem closer to than I am. I thought Sweeney, he kind of did our pillar power rankings today in a weird way, because he obviously told you how he felt about Montgomery because mm-hmm. he moved on from him. And then he said, and there might be roster shakeup stuff coming. So he's telling you the players.
Yep.
And then he put himself and Cam in the crosshairs.
Yeah.
And I also think that's a little bit weird in that if I were Cam Neely, I said it to you yesterday, I wouldn't be doing the release. I'd be distancing myself from Sweeney at this point. If I were looking to CYA, cover my own job, but I would be distancing myself so I can fire him and give myself another time. It's because the pairing is fine until the Jacobs family goes, well, you guys are kind of tight at the hip, so yeah, you both go.
Right.
Just go. The second thing for me is I've always been dubious of the great player running the organization. I think there are few and far between examples of it working and way more examples of it not being the way
sure.
to go. I think you're much better off. Maybe it's because I'm the short, geeky dude or whatever who was never the dominant player. But, like, going to that guy, the career guy who works his way up the ladder in that role, not just, oh, I was, you know, I won a ring, I won a cup, I won this, I'm just going to slide right into the front office, and I know this sport as much as anybody. I mean, Ozzie Newsome, sure, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry West, I think, was good for
Jerry
a long
West
time.
Is tremendous.
Like,
yeah,
there are examples.
John
of
Lynch
it,
is a good example.
But
you know?
John Lynch is
right.
good.
Yeah.
There's other a lot more examples, in my opinion, throughout sports, and it's done more in hockey and in basketball than it is in football.
True.
Although football's trending that way. Hell, we got it down here. We got Jerod Mayo, Dante Hightower, Matthew Slater,
sure
Troy
do.
Brown. We got the whole damn team part of the organization now, and it's early, but the wins are not exactly coming, and the culture is questionable. So I'm interested to see how this changes, because I think retroactively we're going to judge this move, because we're all thinking the players stink. Actually, we all know the players stink right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing stinky. Sorry, Jerod Mayo. They're playing stinky right now. They don't stink because they didn't used to stink.
They stink today.
They stink. Well, they stink through 20 games.
They've stunk for.
Yeah, and stunk, as Mike Giardi famously
yeah.
said about the Patriots wide receivers. He needs a few more of those. This is stink, stank, and stunk like 10 times over. They all are that. But if they get a bump, and it's not just a one-game bump or a two-game bump, if they get a legit bump here, that's when it's going to even more fall on Montgomery. If they just listlessly stumble through the rest of the season and they start making trades and dismantling the roster, shaking things up, then it wasn't Montgomery. You tried. Mm-hmm. You pushed the panic button. You did the normal thing in all these sports. I know Joe Mazzulla was asked about it, and he said we're hired to get fired, basically. Yep. And that's true very much so in basketball and hockey. Very much so. It's a quick turnaround from coach of the year to out of a job in the NBA and NHL is often a couple of years.
Yeah, usually, yeah.
So we're going to figure out, I think, retroactively more about this roster slash the coaches. But the thing I go back to, Razor, I still don't know exactly what Razor said to me yesterday in multiple answers about whether the lack of a contract extension kind of made the executives complicit in this, right? Like, I think they created an environment that festered and fostered failure. Like, I just think they did. And I'm not sure I believe. So am I to believe Montgomery just flat out turned down an extension? Is that what Sweeney's selling me on?
That's what he said.
So was
Do we have that, by the way?
Can was it so crappy that he turned it down?
Can you grab that, Stiz? This is from Sweeney's press conference today. Asked about his lame duck status, the Montgomery's lame duck status. Dropped this little nugget, which I was surprised by. I heard it. I was like, did he just say that? And Jones and Keefe were talking about it afterwards. And I had to rewind it and say, wait, is that what he meant here? Listen to this.
No, not from the second guessing. As I said, I was in extension talks. There was contract offers. So, you know, I feel very comfortable. The person makes it no different than a player making an individual decision. You know, we've got players that did that as well this summer. So, you know, there's two sides to every negotiation, and they have to make their own decisions accordingly. And we react as a result of that. Doesn't mean that it doesn't come to fruition at some point in time, because you're very open. It's not like we shut things down, but at the end of the day, performance is part of this.
We were lowballing everybody, right. Is basically what he's
That's
saying.
What
we
I
lowballed
took that
the
from.
Goalie, we lowballed the coach, we lowballed anybody that had a contract coming up, except for the two guys that I signed away in free agency. We gave them whatever they wanted.
Boy, was
everybody
that
else. Yeah, our coach and our goalie, we played real hardball with both of those guys, and look how well it worked out for us.
So he turned down an extension. He said there was an offer made.
He said there were discussions.
No, he said offer.
Did he say offer?
Play it again.
Did he play it one more time?
Re-rack that. He said offer.
Okay, sorry. I misheard then. I was only...
No, not from the second guessing. As I said, I was in extension talks. There was contract offers. So.
Contract
there
offers.
Were contract
okay, extension
offers.
Talks and contract offers.
So that
right,
means a
right.
contract was offered. He declined.
Yep.
Why did he decline?
Low ball, probably.
He just doesn't like money. He doesn't want to tack on a year or 2 years that he know. Because he knew that he's in the crosshairs.
Sure.
I heard Jones and Keith talking about it.
In the offseason, he knew that?
I think a lot of people thought if he didn't win that series in the playoffs, he was going to get fired. So if they're already pondering it based on that, yeah, you won a series. That's great. But are you on, you know, are they building a statue in front of the garden? No. You're on borrowed time. You're so why would he not want to tack on unless it was embarrassingly low, right? And
Could
he has
been.
Confidence himself. Like, so the offer was on the table. He turned it down. That's to me, a key factor in this.
Yeah, I just said my record is 120-40, whatever it is, and you're offering me this? Like, come on. And he probably thinks if they do fire me, I'll get hired somewhere else. And I think he will. I don't think that he's going to go on without a job forever.
Oh, yeah.
I think maybe not this year, but next year he'll be behind some bench somewhere. I'm sure of that. I think that's basically a guarantee. The players all miss him. They're all talking about him like he was the greatest guy in the world.
Well, and you had him. You should have kept him.
I agree.
Maybe play better.
I agree. You know,
all of you. I'm not talking to like Marchand or anyone in particular.
What are you going to say? Joe Sacco now has a big, big job ahead of him. I wonder how you fix this. We asked Razor about that yesterday. He said it starts in the defensive zone. I agree with him there. I think that's been a major Achilles heel. But where's goalie Bob been all year? Where's goalie Bob? What's up with him? How come goalie Bob, right? Like, didn't Montgomery sort of defer everything over to goalie Bob? Yeah, it's goalie Bob's department. I don't worry about that.
Now the goalie stinks and he's nowhere to be found?
I've not seen hide nor hair of goalie Bob. I haven't heard a word about him or from him at all. So I wonder when he's going to start getting his mojo going again and get these guys defending that crease, because right after the defensive zone stuff, it's got to be Swayman, right? You've got to figure out what's up with him. You've got to figure out how to get him going.
I think you got to get him going. I think you got to get Lindholm going somehow, right? You gave a guy a boatload of money to come in and be a critical aspect of this team, and it just hasn't panned out. I mean, if anything, that's the one. If I'm Sweeney, that's the one I'm actually focused on,
mm-hmm.
because that's the one that's closest tied to my job being over.
Right.
Like, you wasted a boatload of money on a long-term deal that has brought no return on investment. The other thing was Sacco. So I didn't know this. He ran their penalty kill for – the totality, basically, the time that he's here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been good, except for
this year.
So how's he going to fix it? He was already trying to fix it, right?
Good question.
I mean, what's he going to, was Montgomery not allowing him to do certain things he wanted to do? It's like this magic cure of him standing up a little differently on the bench area. Is it really going to be the be-all, end-all, cure-all? It's hard to believe. I mean, I'd love to see it because I do fall back on, because I'm seeing more and more of this, and it's starting to piss me off, quite honestly. All these rip jobs of the roster.
Mm.
Where were all you people in August? Because none of you were writing how bad this roster was, what a terrible team this was, what a terrible fit Lindholm and Zadorov and all these guys were. I didn't read one example of this is a crappy roster with a crappy GM who's going to go.
Yeah.
And now
that's why this is so shocking.
They lose
no one
some games and it's like, oh, this roster stinks. You have no credibility. I'm sorry. You have no credibility as a—
Because you thought the team was going to be good and now they suck?
The performance isn't the roster.
What are you talking about?
If you thought the roster was good—
The roster's not good.
Okay, but why did no one say that before the season started?
Because they thought it would be good.
Okay, but the roster hasn't changed.
A bunch of people were wrong. Sure, of course it has.
No, it hasn't.
Yes,
the
it has. They brought
the
in Zadorov, and they brought in Lindholm and Jones and all these other guys.
So you, those are the only moves that are bad? Because everybody stinks. The goalie stinks. Your scorer stinks.
Agreed.
Your best defenseman stinks. Guys that were the core of your team that had 100 points and won a first-round series are still here, correct?
Right, but Andy, nobody thought this team was going to fall off like this.
No, I know. That's my point. So you all thought the roster was good.
You can't say no one has credibility because they all thought that this 100-win
team
wouldn't completely fall apart this year. You know,
if you're telling me the roster stinks now but told me it was great 2 months ago, I have no value for your credibility. Your talent
is wrong. All right,
well,
tell that to Razor next time we call him.
I will.
You thought this was going to be a Stanley Cup team. Tell him he has
no
credibility.
He still does. He said that yesterday quite definitively. I still think this team is built for the Stanley Cup.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it can make a run.
All right.
It's all the other hockey writers not named Keefe, because Keefe I trust. I haven't heard Keith screw it up. But this is I did this last year with the Patriots. There were a lot of people that thought the Patriots were really talented and were really going to win a lot of games. And I was like, what? Are we looking at the same team? Because I think this team stinks. And the team ended up stinking.
They stunk.
They definitely stunk.
Mm-hmm.
Pot shot from Gerard Mayo toward Bill Belichick today. We'll get to that later in his press conference. Subtle shot. Subtle firing back of Gerard Mayo toward Bill Belichick, who's been taking plenty of pot shots in the open at
Gerard
Mayo.
He certainly has, yes. And I don't even know what you're talking about. So,
it's a good one.
Yeah,
it was subtle, so most people didn't pick up on it. But this guy right here picked up on it.
All right, very
good. I'm
fired
up for this day. I don't know if you can tell.
No, I can tell.
Didn't even have an energy drink or anything.
All full of urine and vinegar over here.
Damn right.
Yeah, very good. So there we go. Don Sweeney says there was a contract offer made to Jim Montgomery. They did offer him a contract. He turned it down. I would imagine, based on the Sweeney Swayman negotiations, that it was some kind of low-ball offer, as they are wont to do with their own guys now for some reason, except for McAvoy and Pasternak, although that one didn't happen right away either. So this is the price of doing business. This is the cost sometimes. And when you get off to a bad start, you start with the coach. That's the easy one. That's the easy domino to knock down. But after that, you gotta stop the rest of them from falling, and you got to stop them before they get to you. According to Keefe, Scoops Keefe, although this wasn't totally a scoop, there are going to be more changes made if things don't turn up. Now, if this team rattles off 5 wins in a row, first of all this stuff about how great Monty was is going to come right back up. Well, how come you couldn't do that for him? What happened? Why did this team suddenly remember how to play hockey after you fired this coach who you think is so great? Like, that's going to be a question, and that's going to be a legitimate question too, by the way, because all of them are talking about how great he is and how much they love him, more so than they did when Cassidy got fired.
Yes.
When Cassidy got fired, there was real tension between him and a lot of the players on that team, and you could tell the old boys club, like I said, Bergeron, Krejci, all those guys, they were just happy to see him off, and they gave him the customary okay, good luck out in Vegas or whatever. But this time, you're hearing guys gushing about Jim Montgomery. They like him. They think he's a good guy and a good coach, and they feel like they failed him. And I'll buy all that if they continue to play like that. If they suddenly kick into gear and they haven't even won 3 games in a row once this year. We're 20 games into the season. They don't have one 3-game win streak under their belt. Like, this season has been brutal. They start winning games. They start rattling off wins, fair or not. That's the way the conversation's going to go. So what was he doing wrong? How is Montgomery holding them back? Why were they not playing for him? All that sort of stuff. And that's what happens. Now, if things continue the way that they're going, I do believe there will be trades, and I said that yesterday before Keefe even had his scoop. Mm-hmm. I think that that's the next natural step here, and I don't necessarily think they're going to blow it all up. I know I'm being reactionary and angry and everything that I usually am when it comes to the Bruins when they're playing like this, but this to me seems like a three-step plan to get to a new day in Bruins hockey, if you want to even get there. And you only want to get there if you continue playing like this. If you continue being outside the playoff picture, looking in, hovering around 500, getting beat by the Columbus Blue Jackets, etc. Next thing is players, right? You take a look at some of these guys, and I don't know who they're actually going to look at. Their best players all have no movement clauses, so, I mean, you're probably not going to be moving any of them. But I've heard Trent Frederick's name get tossed around. I like Frederick, but I could see that happening. I could see it happening with a couple other guys, too, like Geeky and, you know, some of your other defensemen, Carlo, etc. After that, who's left? Don Sweeney, Cam Neely, and then that's the last line of defense for this thing.
And he said that. Yeah. I give him credit. He said the roster, the coach is gone, the roster's next, and then it's organizational shakeup, right? That means him and Neely. I also liked that. Organizational shakeup. He didn't just say me.
Right.
You know, like Gerard Mayo says me or Bill Belichick says me. He said organizational.
Yeah.
So you know what he's doing? He's saying, Neely, you're as entrenched in this failure as I am. So don't try to skirt here and make me the fall guy like we just made him the fall guy. I'm going down with you and you're going down with me.
My boat's sinking. I'm shooting one cannonball back up, just so you know.
Absolutely.
One of those type
Absolutely.
Of deals. So there you go. Bruins on the docket here. We'll talk Celtics in the next segment. But first, here's Stiz to tell you what's trending. Indeed it was. Boston Celtics end the unbeaten streak to start the year for the Cleveland Cavaliers. What a game last night at TD Garden. It's Christian Arcan. It's Andy Hart's WEEI Afternoons. Before we get more into this, a lot of people on the text line, Hart, you didn't give any examples. Who are these players that ended up being bad GMs? There's so many examples. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Isaiah Thomas, Brett Hull, Magic Johnson, Derek Jeter. I mean, like, so mad. Jeter didn't take over the Yankees, but he was a great player who ended up.
Oh, I don't even care about that.
There's so many. I mean, there's just so many of them. Like, come on. Like, this is a very common thing that happens. There's a lot of good ones, too. There's been a lot of good GMs who were former players, like Elway and guys like that. Like, we mentioned. Yeah, well,
there's
you know,
a few.
There's been some.
I would say it's multiples to one. 5 to 1. 5 failures to 1 success. Something like that.
Sure.
Elway
I'm not doing them all in my head right now, but
Elway was a bit of a cheap one, in my opinion.
Why
is
that?
He struggled. Ooh, Peyton Manning's a free agent. I'll sign Peyton Manning. They got good, and then it burned and crashed and burned after that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because remember, he was drafting bad quarterbacks in the first round. He couldn't develop them. That whole thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not even sure Elway is one of the good ones.
All right, fair
enough. There are a few good ones. More often than not, they fail. And I think some of it is knowledge, experience, working your way up, time commitment. Like, I think there's a lot of reasons, but don't tell me there aren't a ton of failures with very great to very good players failing in management roles.
And by the way, I don't think either one of us are calling Cam Neely or Don Sweeney a failure, right? They're not failures.
No.
They've been good. I mean, they've been a consistent playoff team that they've overseen here, right?
Are they winners or are they losers?
Now, that's a different question, but are they failures?
Okay, let's go down that road real quick before we get to the Celtics.
Sure.
Cam Neely, winner?
No.
Don Sweeney, winner?
Nope.
Okay, so they're kind of failures.
But they didn't fail. Like, failing.
You don't win, you failed.
But if you're
second
a playoff
place,
team
first
every
loser,
year.
Whatever.
Okay, but teams that suck and then, right? But no, that's not true, though. If a team's really bad every year, right, there's a reason why they've kept their job. Like, if a team sucks every year, then the guy gets fired. They've put together playoff-caliber teams, which is better than you can say for a lot of teams in the NHL and a lot of GMs.
But it's good enough? Did they maximize
any I didn't say windows? That. I just said they're not failures. Failures are teams or GMs that can't do that. I mean, I think that's what I consider failures.
This is like very
Jordan
Giannis of you.
And Isaiah Thomas and these other ones. The ones I just rattled off. Those guys were failures. More so than Neely and Sweeney, I think. You don't think so?
I'm just... Like,
you put them all together. Huh?
Using your logic, if you're not a winner, you're a loser. And therefore, if you're a loser, you're a failure.
I think
losers
are
failures?
Not necessarily.
You are a complex individual.
Not necessarily.
There's a lot here. But
there's different.
The
there's different levels of loser. All right, that's basically it. There's me down here, and then there's Isaiah Thomas, and there's Michael Jordan, and everybody else. There's different tiers to loser.
As losers in business say, let's put a pin in this. We'll circle back around at some point.
All right, let's do it. The Celtics not losers last night
awesome.
As they beat the Cavaliers, shot the lights out, as you just heard right there, and still somehow, despite shooting 54%. From three, only won that game by 3 points, which goes to show just how much heart that Cavs team. That's a good team over there, and they play their ass off. Donovan Mitchell, that three that he hit, the one where he crossed over on Tatum and hit like a 35-footer at the end of the game. That was ridiculous.
He's pretty good now.
And he did not have a good night shooting either, by the way. He missed a ton of threes in that game. But he hit that one. And also, I thought Tatum was going to get a flagrant on that body check that he delivered. That he turned into Grant Williams for a second.
It was very eerily similar.
Yeah.
Just like strange. It was a linebacker-type play or a safety play.
I thought he was Christian Barmore or something.
It was very strange, and I don't really understand. At first, I thought Mitchell was flopping, and then he actually had, like, blood in his mouth.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's not flopping.
And all the replays you showed it, I was like, ooh, no, he got him. Like,
oh, yeah?
That, yeah, he got him good. And listen,
well, I was being a homer at first.
At that point in the game, going for a steal like that, a cross-body steal, full speed into the guy, like, what are you doing?
You're not that quick.
That was crazy, yeah.
He's not, like, Tatum has a lot of strengths, but, like, pure quickness isn't one of them.
Mm-mm.
And you had to make that play without having happened what happened, you have to be, like, Tyreek Hill quick.
Yeah.
And you're not Tyreek Hill quick. And it was eerily similar to what Grant Williams did, but that's probably my lone criticism of Jason Tatum.
Jason Tatum was tremendous.
He was awesome. Hesitant to put him on the pedestal that most people put him on. This was a pedestal game.
Yeah.
This was a game he showed up, he showed out, shot the lights out from three early, was awesome, finished, took it to the rim as well, balanced his game out. That one where he came from sort of the right side and dunked.
Yeah.
Every once in a while he has those and I'm like, I want to see more of that. Do that more. Less of the step backs and side steps and all those threes. Take it to the rim and dunk on people. But I thought he and Al Horford, to me, if you were doing like hockey stars, players of the game or whatever, those are your two. Because Al Horford looked like he shaved about 10 years off his career.
He was great.
One of those possessions, he had back-to-back blocks on the same possession.
Yeah.
Block, offensive rebound,
like
block.
Chase down block.
Yes.
Too. Like not just protecting the rim, like recovering
also
and going back over.
Arm switch block. Oh, I'm going up
him
left.
Off
I'll come up with the right hand and block it that way. He was phenomenal. He scored, what was he, plus whatever?
Plus 18.
Yeah, led the team. See, that's where numbers, I like when the numbers work with my eyeballs and my head. I watched
because Tatum was only plus two.
Right.
Right.
But you look and you say, Al had a great game. Al had a great game. He was significant. What was Drew Carter calling him? The something minivan, the Medford.
I was flipping back and forth, so I didn't.
Okay, so he's from around here. He has local ties. He was calling him like the Medford minivan or the Melrose minivan. He's a scrappy player.
Yeah,
he's a guy you don't want to see too much of. Honestly, if you're a good team with star players, he's a guy that could annoy the hell out of you.
Yeah,
you
could tell he was annoying Tatum.
The charge he took, and he did the whole. While he was sitting his ass on the court and the key there, he was annoying. If I see
that one play where he flew across the court
absolutely.
And Tatum was like, get the bleep
out
of here. That was
people
great.
Have made of that where he's like going across the city of Boston and like all these other pictures. But he's
no,
a guy.
That's good.
I enjoyed watching him play last night. Give me a 7-game series, Cavs Celtics by game two. I will be swearing at him. I will hate that guy as much as I hate Giannis. He's a hateable guy if they play a series. But The big takeaway here, the Cavs are for real.
Yeah.
The Cavs are not going to go anywhere. The Celtics are better. Tatum is better. Like, they're a better team. You're going to get Porzingis back. You're better. And I know the Cavs were a little bit undermanned themselves, but I don't think they're a fraudulent. I don't think they're due for, like, a 7-game losing streak.
I don't either. They were down 17 at the half, and they came out in that third quarter on fire. I mean, that third quarter, I watched that. I said, oh, my God.
Yep.
Celtics are going to blow this. That's what I thought. That's what I was thinking. I was like,
you really are negative.
Well, they scored 40 points in the quarter, Andy. I was
that's
like,
the
they
NBA.
Can't, they can't stop them. I thought they were going to ride that wave right till the end. And then the Celtics started hitting their threes again. I mean, it was as simple as that. The Celtics wind up shooting 54% from three-point range, 22 of 41, which is pretty remarkable for a team that guns as much as they do. Like they play the averages, but when they play the averages, it's like attempts, right? Not even necessarily may. If we shoot this many threes and we make 36 or 30 whatever percent of them, then we're going to win if we put up this many shots. They shot 41 threes and hit 54% of them and eked this one out. Like that tells you that Cleveland's for real. Absolutely. And what a fun night. I mean, that's a fun night at the Garden. I'm looking forward to the next time they play each other. They play each other again on December 1st in Cleveland. I got that one circled. And by the way, don't be surprised if you see Cleveland dishing out some hard fouls in that game, because Mitchell got rocked at the end of that game. Like, Tatum going up there and doing that, I said that, ooh, when are they playing them next? Very soon. So it's going to be fresh in everybody's mind. I'd have my head on a swivel if I'm a Celtic
so
in that game.
The only reason I would say that might not happen, it was star versus star. You know what I mean? Like, if
they want to protect their star, don't they?
No, I know, but it was your star that did it.
Right.
And I feel like that makes it a little bit different. Whereas if, you know, Peyton Pritchard had done it, I think it may have kind of grown a little more something.
Maybe.
But because it's star versus star, I feel like there might. I don't know. I'm interested to see that. And this is what I talked about with you yesterday. To me, this is how you grow a rivalry.
Exactly.
They're good. It was a dogfight fun game. You knocked them off. Now you got to go to their place. Oh, by the way, at the end of the game in your place, there was a play that was a little questionable. We'll see how you react. Your star, my star, blood, fouls, all of that. So this could grow into a rivalry because they're fun, energetic young teams with, you know, it's good basketball.
Yeah.
Like it's good, competitive, up energy type basketball.
Yeah, it is. And for someone who was desperate for a rival for this team, you got one right now. That had everything I wanted. That had all the elements of a rivalry game.
Yep.
It was close. It was exciting. It was violent. I mean, it was a very physical game. Not just that play at the end, but it seemed like all game long. Guys were going right at each other.
There were calls. I was annoyed at the officials at various points for late whistles. And can I challenge that? Can I not challenge that? What the hell were you watching? What's his name? Tony Brothers. Yeah. Him, like, laughing with people, but, like, I don't think you're doing a great job, so stop laughing. This isn't funny. This is a good competitive game between two best teams. So even the officials played their role, and I liked that.
Yeah. Good night overall. 617-779-7937. We got Bruins on the table. We got the Celtics on the table. The New England Patriots taking on the Miami Dolphins this weekend. Gerard Mayo talked about the matchup in his media availability today. Had some interesting insights on it. We'll get to that next.
Why don't you just tell the Dolphins that Jonathan Jones is going to cover Tyreek Hill?
Sure. Why not?
Like,
why don't you just tell me what movie
seriously.
That is Gerard Mayo and his media availability today. Talking about the Miami Dolphins, who they have to play in Miami, a historic house of horrors for this New England Patriots team. Even when Belichick and Brady were here, I mean, it's not, and they would lose to all sorts of different random crap bag quarterback. Like, it was really, you know, going all the way back to, like, Pennington, I think, right? Wasn't Pennington on the Dolphins?
Yeah.
Or was he on the Jets? No, he went over to the Dolphins, too. But, yeah, it was him. Guys like Cleo Lemon.
Jay Fiedler was the good one kind of early on there.
Yeah, you had a lot of times where it just didn't work out for you down there. Who can forget the Gronkowski play in the at the end of the game there where he got deked out? Was that? It wasn't Devontae Parker, was it? No, it was, what was the guy's name? That wide receiver. He was, I forget what his name is, but he was a good player. And there was a lot of examples of this. There's a lot of examples of the Dolphins just panting you down there. And now, they're good and you aren't. So I wonder what we're going to see here. What are you expecting from the Patriots this weekend, Andy? As it is a big week, as you pointed out in the show email today, and at what point do we assume that they're going to show up and compete and give this Dolphins team a game?
Am I taking the cheese if I feel like we've reached that point where they're going to come up, show up, they're going to compete, they're going to give it whatever they have, and I'm not saying what they have is good enough. I'm not, you know, Cole Strange doesn't change everything. Christian Barmore, although it's good to have Christian Barmore now week two. I'm expecting him to be better than just thrown out there week one.
He wasn't at practice today, so.
Oh, he wasn't?
No.
Jesus.
Wise wasn't either, so.
Well, Wise, that was, yeah. I think that was an absence last week that hurt you. And as he said, this isn't Tua now. Both teams have better quarterback play. They have Tua. That's who their offense runs best with. You have Drake May, who, depending on where you read, is now like the best quarterback in the NFL. The hype is really picking up steam for him, especially with the analytics crew.
Mm-hmm.
I think they will compete. You know, they have historically done a pretty good job with Tyreek Hill. And Waddle to some degree. Now they've had tackling issues. There was that one down there 2 years ago where, like, Bentley and Duggar missed a tackle and Waddle went, like, 70 yards or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the Dolphins. They are the ultimate, you know, you can do your job for 59 minutes and 30 seconds, but if you F up twice, three times, three plays, those could all be long touchdowns, big plays. Now, obviously, Tyreek Hill hasn't had a great year. He went between week one and, like, last week between scoring.
Yeah.
Thanks, by the way, Tyreek. Appreciate that. Needed that.
His 100-yard game was the game he got arrested before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
and now
he's
claiming
100 yards.
They hurt his wrist when they put the handcuffs on, and he hasn't been the same since, and it broke
Give
him
me
mentally.
A break.
Wow, Stiz does not like that topic.
I do. It rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
Those cops are pretty aggressive. Those cops are pretty aggressive. And, yes, also pause. But, yeah, that was, listen, I mean, that was.
We never, Arcan, we never should have taught Andy.
First of all, you didn't teach me this, and we'll get into this later, but my kids taught me this, and they've been telling me to use it, and I was too much of a chicken to use it. But I heard the quarterback of the New England Patriots say it today at a press conference, so apparently it's okay. Because, by the way, just a side note, the more he talks, the more I like him.
Pause. Yeah.
Pause.
I agree. I thought his quote today about football is easy, people are complicated. Great. Loved it.
And I've been saying that for years because there was no one who tried to complicate football more than Bill Belichick.
Hmm.
And these modern players, I think Lamar Jackson is the poster boy for that. But I also think Josh Allen, their style of play is like, yeah, I know you said something about two safeties and blah, blah, blah. I'm just going to run by the guy. Is that okay? I know you didn't put that in the game plan, but I can do that. Or I'm just going to throw it between those two guys. Why wouldn't I? Like, they look at it through such a childlike, authentic view, and that we have one of those guys. And I'm doing the Scal thing. An hour early, I'm doing the wee thing. We have one of those guys now. How much more fun is this?
Much better.
Screw Mac Jones. Screw Cam Newton after week two and those boring offenses and trying to talk ourselves into paths. Again, you have a fun, athletic quarterback who's playing the game the way everybody else is for a coach who acknowledges that, who wants that.
Yeah.
That's the part of Jerod Mayo that I like. You know, we talk about he doesn't necessarily play or his team doesn't necessarily fit the mold of an all-pro middle linebacker from 10 years ago.
Right.
The part I like is the first thing he wanted was a quarterback that could extend plays. He sees the modern game. He sees the modern quarterback. Like, that's really hard to defend. I want to do that. You might think he'd be like, fullback, run the ball. And they do want to run the ball more than I'd probably like. And that's part of his whole identity and phase. But his modern embracing of the quarterback, the runner, the offense, the off-platform, off-script throws is part of what I love. And it's part of why they're good right now. They start fast. Right? So Drake May gave Alex Van Pelt that. So if you start fast in Miami, you absolutely have a chance.
Yep.
The Dolphins have not been the Dolphins. The Dolphins don't just roll out of bed and score 70 like they did at Denver last year, right? Like, they're no longer, I mean, you don't want to make them that. You don't want to be their get-right opportunity.
Well, they kind of got right against the Raiders last week, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's the Raiders.
Right.
Like, don't be another get-right game. Mm. And I'm sorry, did you see Mark Davis flipping out in his box?
No, but I bet that was funny.
Yes, it was. He was pissed. Like, I'm starting to wonder if Pierce could be in trouble. Because he did the quick, you know, get rid of the coordinator early in the year. Usually the next step after that, Don Sweeney style, like, you take the easy one, you replace the coordinator, your job might be next. But the Dolphins got right against them. Don't let them do that again. I think the Patriots will be competitive. I'm just kind of... Last week, I thought they might get blown out by the Dolphins. They didn't.
By the Rams.
I mean, the Rams. They stagnated what I thought was a strength of the Rams, that front. They didn't allow it to ruin the game.
Mm-hmm.
You have a decent matchup this week. So if you put John Jones on Hill, and he plays it like he's played it more often than not, he's getting older, so I don't assume that's a fact, and you got the world's greatest cornerback, Christian Gonzalez, from everything I read on social media, that ML football guy.
Yeah. Man,
do you keep up with his posts?
ML football?
He puts up a Christian Gonzalez post. He's an aggregator.
Okay.
And he puts one up like every few hours about how Gonzalez is the best cornerback that's ever played the game.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I don't know this person, but I'll take your word for it.
I've had to meet him on occasion.
Garrett Wilson was on a podcast, and he was asked about the best corners in the league. He said Surtain, Gardner, and then he's like, oh, wait a minute, I got to mention Christian Gonzalez, too.
See?
So, yeah.
I told you a couple weeks ago, one of the best young corners in football, and you pushed back.
I did. But looks
I'm
like
with Garrett Wilson.
Looks like, Garrett, how are those Jets doing? 617-779-7937. One thing that concerns me is that the Dolphins beat the Rams recently, and they beat them up front.
Yep.
And that scares me a little bit because they were getting to that quarter. They were getting to Stafford. They were shutting down Kyron Williams. They had all the run lanes blocked up, and they were able to get around the corner. And we saw the Rams manhandle the Patriots' defensive front.
Mm-hmm.
So I worry about that a little bit. I worry about the trenches with this Dolphins team, which is kind of weird because you think of their skill position guys and how that's sort of the main thing. But if you look at the matchup and the way that they were able to sort of toss around the Rams' offense and defensive line, that gets me a little worried because I thought that was where the Rams kind of won that game against the Patriots.
Yeah, I don't feel great about anything for the Patriots. Like, if you made me bet, like, my mortgage, I have no idea about the – I think they're going to show up and compete. I think that they are going to be led by a quarterback who's competitive, makes some plays. Now, Mayo harping on what he should be harping on. The key to this team right now is going to be turnovers. If May stops turning it over and they can start creating turnovers, which you want to talk about a characteristic that's been absent since Belichick lost, that was a big part of the Belichickian defenses is forcing turnovers, right? Getting turnovers over the years.
Mm-hmm.
This team has not been able to force turnovers. If they can flip that script, they're playing all these one-score games. So how about, very simple, one less turnover for you per game, one more that you get from the opponent, you're going to win a lot of football games because you're playing them tight.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, I mean, that's all you can ask for. And those are the type of losses, if you end up losing games like that, that I'm okay with. I was okay with that Rams loss. There were things about it I didn't like. But in general, if you're going up against a team of that caliber, keeping it close and you're within one score, that's okay with me, right? We all sort of agree. Like, this isn't necessarily about wins and losses. The owner said it. The coach said it. Everybody said it. Everybody except Drake May has been saying that all season long. And early on, these losses were not good. I mean, the Houston game was bad. Jacksonville game was bad. The Titans game, close as it was, bad loss. You string together against good teams, and I consider the Dolphins, I know they're 4-6, but I still consider them a pretty good team. You hang around with them in Miami, something that your predecessors didn't necessarily do on a on a regular basis, I'd be okay with that too. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go to Austin in East Hampton. He has a thought on Jason Tatum. Go ahead, Austin.
Hey guys, what's going on?
What's up?
You know, real quick, I just want to say, when I watched the play go down last night, it was certainly kind of, I don't say shocking, but just out of character for him. But then half a second later, I jumped up because as far as I'm concerned, the Cleveland Cavaliers are a very good team. And last year, maybe if Mitchell was healthy, fully healthy, that is, you're talking about a potential run. I know they, you know, I think lost 4-1, but all those games were really close. Even, you know, once Mitchell went out, not so much. But what I'm trying to say is the one thing I never really see from Jason Tatum outside of his first year when he dunked on LeBron and bodied him is a bit of the nasty.
Hmm.
I don't think it was, you know, personal. I don't think it was intentional. I think he saw the ball. He went for a steal. But you know what? I got no problem with Jason Tatum sending the message over to Donovan Mitchell and the Cleveland Cavaliers to let him know that, hey, this is my conference. This is my title, and the road comes through Boston. Now, saying that, Donovan Mitchell is really good. He is really yeah. good. I am really nervous of Donovan Mitchell, and to be honest with you, I wish it had happened to Garland, who I think isn't nearly as good.
Can't say that on the radio, Austin. Thanks for the call. But that was a good call before that. I thought it was a pretty
even
good call.
With that, it was a solid call. You just can't say that. We can't
even
allow you to
it.
Say that.
That's true.
I agree with him. And if that interpretation, it's a little bit of like an English class interpretation of it, but if that interpretation was Tatum sending a message, I love it. Because I think that's what's been lacking.
I like
in
it too. Maybe
game.
Not at that particular point in the game. You know,
I'm fine with it. That's a better
flagrant
point.
Foul where they get two shots on the ball like okay. that. You know,
I'll
then
still
all of
beat
a sudden,
you anyway. Yeah. I like the swagger of it. Now, I don't. I think we're putting more on it than maybe it was.
I think
he just had a weird play. I don't really know what to make of it. But if you
he was playing with an edge though,
absolutely.
He was
that
playing
Tatum,
nasty in that game.
That Tatum
and it was great.
Will not allow Jaylen Brown to win Eastern Conference Final MVP or NBA Finals MVP. That Tatum. Is a better competitor, alpha. I saw somebody in the Twitch chat, the dog,
yep.
with a W-D-A-W-G, dog. That's what Tatum was last night. I feel like we can count on, like, one hand how many times we've really felt he was a dog over the years.
Yep.
Not that he doesn't have good games, but that he's a true dog, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of what he did there. If that Tatum is around, then I feel better than ever that you're going to have another banner to put up.
Drake May said, football is easy. People are complicated today. He had a couple other pretty big quotes. We'll talk about where Drake May is ranking among not just rookie quarterbacks, but all the quarterbacks right now, right after this.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.